So after having told us how we can divinize our activities from tamas, which is laziness, to rajas, which is activity, and then ultimately sattva, which is purity, knowledge, then Bhagwan takes up the topic of meditation, and he told us how to quieten the mind, and with a pure mind, we're self-controlled, give up all attention to sounds or other impulses that may come when you sit for meditation and give up likes and dislikes. That is the only way to quieten the mind, because the mind runs towards things I like and runs away from things I dislike, and our whole life is spent in I like this, dislike this, I want this, don't want. So be balanced. And then Krishna says, such an individual who wants to evolve spiritually has to practice solitude, enjoy his own company, just spend some time doing nothing, just being by himself. And the mind, the speech, and the body should be controlled. Overuse of speech, overuse of overactivity. Some people are so restless. So that should be quietened. The mind should be controlled. Should not be running. The mind should be under our control, where I choose what I want to think instead of the mind telling me what to think. And also ups and downs of the mind, because mind will be happy, unhappy, agitated, silent, peaceful. But I am the witness. I am the witness in consciousness, Sakshi. And that is the attitude in meditation, not only in meditation, but throughout the day. When the mind is going through its disturbances, I have to remain silent, peaceful. And that is a very important exercise to practice, that to be observant of the mind. That's why Krishna says, Dhyan Yog Paro Nityam. Throughout the day, you should be in this meditative pose, where your mind is peaceful, and even if it is not peaceful, somebody says something, I am not affected. Why? Because I am detached. Vairagyam sam upashritaha. So that's what we had talked last week. And then Bhagavan says you should avoid ego, ahamkaram. Now, ahamkaram, ego, people have a lot of questions, so I'll talk about this a little bit today. He says give up ego, and then along with ego comes all the other things: power, arrogance, desire, anger, collecting, parigraham, accumulating. So vimuchya, so be totally free from these. As long as you have these in your mind, you have ego, arrogance, pride, anger, collecting things, you cannot grow spiritually. Vimuchya nirmama, and then become without I and mine. Nothing is mine, Lord, everything is yours. Such a person becomes peaceful, and brahma bhuyaya kalpate. And such a person is ready for the next step. Because so far we have talked about what to do in the world, but how to go beyond the world and to become one with that highest reality, that is, this is the preparatory step. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. So this is what we had studied last week. Now the three verses that we are going to do today, two verses and one next week, in my opinion, is the most powerful. It's amazing. When I was preparing this, if you practice these three verses, there is nothing else you need to do. You will become, you will realize, you will reach. So these three verses, 54, 55 and 56, everyone not only should read them, but memorize them. Memorize them and make them part of your life. They are beautiful. So everybody has Gurudev's commentary. So read the commentary, of course, when you go home. Today I'll try to explain that. And then memorize these verses and make them part of your daily life. And most beautiful verses. If you want to know what is the shortcut to realization, this is it. Three verses. Pahunch jayenge. Nothing more you need to do. I guarantee you that. I don't know how much my guarantees work, but for whatever it is, you can take it. So first, just a few words about ego, because we talked last week about ego and people had questions about ego. So ego is taken in different ways. Like Freud talks about ego, superego, you know, at the psychological level. Then some people talk about ego as arrogance. You know, he's very egotistical. In spirituality, ego is this sense of I and mine, and how I am different from God, I am different from everybody. That's why ahankar is put down in our spirituality. But ego also can be translated as self-esteem. Self-esteem. And self-esteem generally is considered as good. Even we tell our children, you know, you should have good, high self-esteem. And self-esteem is what? What is self-esteem? Self-esteem is confidence in myself, respect for myself, confidence in my abilities. And how does that come? Self-esteem, A, by right understanding, by application of this knowledge, and by practicing values and adhering to certain principles. So when a person has the right knowledge, applies that in his life, and then practices values, you know, like love, compassion, kindness, service to all, lack of arrogance, lack of pride. So when this, and then also sticks to his principles, that I have certain principles in life. So when a person does that, that self-esteem is a healthy self-esteem, where I have confidence in myself, not a false confidence born out of wrong understanding or confidence born out of my wealth or my power, but confidence born out of inner strength. And that's what we see in people like Mahatma Gandhi, where the whole British Empire could not shake him because he had that inner confidence, that inner strength. He had just a stick and he used to wear a loincloth, had no clothes, no money, no power, nothing. And where did he get this strength from? From the Bhagavad Gita. He used to read the Bhagavad Gita every day. He had intense devotion for the Lord and he stuck to his principles, the principles of truth, non-violence. So that such an esteem or self-esteem is called a healthy self-esteem. Then there is a high self-esteem, it is rajasic. This is sattvic, this is pure, and this is takes us towards spirituality. Again, it's not the ultimate, but takes us higher. Then there is the rajasic self-esteem, which is born out of arrogance, where I look down on others. I think I am superior, I am rich, I am. In the 16th chapter, there are a lot of descriptions about such a person. Adyo bhi abhijan asmi, ko nyosti sadrisho maya. I am rich, I am born in a high family, there is nobody equal to me. So that kind of attitude is called arrogance. That is a high self-esteem, and that of course obviously should be avoided. And then the third is the low self-esteem, the tamasic type, where I'm good for nothing, you know, I'm useless, who will hire me, you know, what can I do, I don't think I can. So that kind of low self-esteem is to be avoided. So what we need is a healthy self-esteem born out of principles, values, and the right knowledge. So once a person is free of those negativities, then he becomes ready for the highest knowledge. So Krishna is now in these three verses telling us what is this person who is becoming Brahman, is becoming close to that highest truth. How does this person act? And these three stepwise, Krishna is taking us to that highest goal. So let us do verse number 54. Brahma Bhutav Prasannatma. Na shochati na kankshati. Samas sarveshu bhuteshu. Mad bhaktim labhate param. So Brahma Bhuta. So here he says he has not yet become Brahman. He is becoming Brahman. So what do we mean by becoming Brahman? We'll talk about that. So how can I become Brahman? Brahman is all powerful, all pervasive, the creator of the whole, and I am nobody. I am a useless person. I can't even, all I can create is problems. And he created the whole universe. How can I and Brahman be one? So Brahma Bhuta and Prasanna. Prasanna in Hindi and other languages means happy. But in Bhagavad Gita or in Sanskrit, prasanna means peaceful. Prasannatma, he is peaceful. Na shochati na kangshati, he neither grieves nor desires. So you mean he's just a piece of rock just sitting there, I don't want anything. Not like that. We'll discuss what it is. Na shochati na kangshati. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. And in all beings, he is the same. Sama, same among all beings. And then Krishna, everywhere, from time to time, he will, they say, na yena kena prakarena. Somehow or the other, he brings bhakti. He always, wherever you see, in every chapter, somehow or the other, he brings bhakti. Why? Because bhakti is very important. So, mad bhaktim labhate param. Krishna says, he reaches my devotional state, which is the highest state he reaches. So let us see now what these words mean. So the first thing is to become Brahman. Now, you know, the Upanishad says, Tattva Masi, you are that. And the student says, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. And so people think, it is easy. Why are you repeating that? You have told us before. I have been listening from Swamiji since 1990 when we started going to Chinmaya Mission, 25 years. And I had met somebody who had just gone to one seminar somewhere, and she was telling Neeru, she said, why do you keep going to these lectures? They already told you, you are Brahman. That's all, you are that. Then why do you keep going? And she literally told her that. And she says, you are wasting your time. I already read it. One book she has read. They're also written by some American author in English. I know already, so why waste my time? And she said, they already taught me how to meditate. They already taught me. There is nothing more to read, nothing more to, you're wasting your time. 25 years we have been listening, yet the goal seems distant, seems far away. It's not that clear. It's not that easy. It's not meant to scare people, but it's meant to tell that it requires some effort. You may say, I am Brahman, but do you feel that you are Brahman? Do you feel that you are that infinite reality? No, I don't. At least I don't. I'm sure. So there is a difference becoming saying I am Brahman, knowing I am Brahman, and feeling I am Brahman. Because what happens is our world is so much outside. Our attention is always outside. We never have time to look inwards. And unless you look inwards, you will never discover that inner presence. So initially, the knowledge is intellectual, and that is good. At least you know that you are Brahman. At least somebody told you that. At least our guru says, Tattvamasi, that Brahman which you think that is you, Tvamasi. I am not saying it, the Upanishad is saying it. And the guru is saying it, Tattvamasi, you are that. You know, in Chandogya Upanishad, the father who is teaching the child says that Brahman you are. It's not meant for arrogance, it's meant for thinking. So these four Mahavakyas they have, Prajna Nyam Brahma, Ayam Atma Brahma, Tattvam Asi, Aham Brahmasmi. So Prajna Nyam means that consciousness, that learning is Brahman, and Ayam Atma, and this Atma, this self of all, this Om is Brahman, that Brahman you are, the teacher says. And then the student says, I am Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi. That's a very, very late stage. So first is the intellectual knowledge. It's like a child who is 11 years old. Now she's asking her mother, you know, what do you mean by to be married? What happens when you have a husband? What happens when you have a child? What happens when you are pregnant? Now the mother, if she's wise, she will explain to the child at her level, you know, what happens when you get married, when you have a baby, but she, or she may have Googled. Nowadays, of course, nobody asks parents. They say, I'll just Google it. And so they will Google childbirth, pregnancy, everything they know, you know, because in Google, everything is there. So intellectually, she has understood, okay, what it means to be married, to have a child. But she has not yet experienced it. She has not gone through all the trials and tribulations or problems of being married and all this, you know, doing it's difficult. So, but at least she has understood. So similarly, You and I at this moment have understood it intellectually, and that is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But what is the true meaning of that, and how does it apply in my life? That Sri Krishna is telling us. So we'll deal again and again with this topic of I am Brahman throughout this talk and also next week. So we'll just talk about what it actually means. But how does it transfer into my life? So Prasannatma, he becomes very peaceful. Now, when is my peace disturbed? One is, of course, we have said, when you have a lot of likes and dislikes, or when you have a lot of desires. Or also, a peace is disturbed in differences. When I am different from him, then he and I don't get along. Whether it's between individuals, between communities, between nations. When they see difference, that is when conflict arises. When there are no differences, that is peace. So peace can be only created by peace. Peace cannot be created by violence. Peace cannot be created by agitation. People say, I will destroy this person, and then there will be peace. That will be a piece of suppression, even between nations. You know, when there's war, they say, you know, we'll go in and just take over the country. All that is going to do is create more conflict. For peace, peace has to be created by peace and by removal of differences, not by conflict. And that's why when two Mahatmas meet, they have nothing to talk. There's a very interesting story. Our Gurudev Swami Chinmayanandaji one time went to meet Raman Maharishi. Raman Maharishi, you must have heard of, was a great realized master living in around the 1940s and 50s. And so Swami Chinmayananda, he went to meet Raman Maharishi, and it was very interesting because these two great realized masters are meeting, and people were wondering, you know, what kind of wisdom will come out of this meeting. And so they were both sitting. Other people were standing little away, but they were watching, you know, to see what they will talk. You know, what do great Mahatmas talk when they sit together? And they spoke nothing, not a single word, because they were both just enjoying each other's that aura, that each other's, you know, that company, just that silence, that peace. There was such a tremendous silence and peace in that room that nobody wanted to disturb it. People were so silent. And that is, the silence is where this, ultimately, that is experienced. It cannot be experienced in noise. It cannot be experienced in talking. It cannot be experienced in discussing. You cannot discuss your way to Brahman. You can silently experience that. So that's why practicing silence, practicing solitude is very, very important. So that is what he says, Prasannatma. He has, his mind is ever peaceful. And then why? Na shochati na kangshati. He does not grieve and he does not desire. Why, when do I grieve? One is, of course, at a loss. But anything I lose, which I think is precious, then I grieve. Right? Or I wanted something and I didn't get it. Or I had something and I lost it. So that is when we grieve. But grief comes out of incompleteness, that I had this thinking and it was making me so happy, or this person was making me happy, and then it's gone. Now I am unhappy. So because I think myself to be incomplete, and by getting this particular object or this person or this power or this position, I was complete. Now that I have lost it, you know, this job, for example, anything, you know, I mean, in this modern world, you know, jobs come and go, people are hired, people are fired. But if you are identified with that position and say that alone is making me complete, then you will be grieved. Otherwise, you say, it's the nature of things. American corporate world is like that. Same thing, people, you know, they come and go, and understanding that, then it frees you from grief. And then also desires also come from incompleteness. I wish I had that, and that would make me happy. And it could be anything. It could be ice cream or pizza or anything, any small thing, or it could be a big thing like a BMW or a house. Or so situations and things can make us happy or unhappy. If I think I'm incomplete, does not mean that, as we have said before, does not mean you have to put on orange clothes, give up your house, wife, children, and go to the forest and meditate. There's no more forest left to meditate anyway. We have destroyed it, so there is no place you can be silent. But the point of the matter is that it means that at while I am working and doing, if I have the thing, it's very good, very fine, welcome. Or nahi aaya to theek hai, it will go. Things that are come will go. Nothing is going to be with me forever. So with that understanding, and I am fine, so that understanding, then I am complete regardless of things coming and going. Na shochati na kamshati. He neither grieves nor desires. And then this is the next very beautiful. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Among all beings, the person is the same. And that can only come when you understand that this Brahman, the consciousness, that is me, is also everybody. Everything has come from that. The example, you know, of course we have talked many times, but when you see ocean, or when you see river, or when you see a lake, or when you see a wave, or when you see the froth, or when you see the, you know, whirlpool, you see all those variations, rain, but they are all water. A wise person knows it's all water. A child may think that water, rain is different from ocean, is different from river, or, you know, because one is gone in the sky and come down. But a wise person is the same ocean, you know, it became water vapor, went into the sky and fell down and rained. Now it doesn't matter, it's not that when you are in deep meditation, then you see water, and then when you come out of meditation, you see all the differences. No. Once you have understood that everything is water, then whether you are in meditation or not, water doesn't disappear. The water understanding doesn't disappear. Of course, you know that lake is different from river, is different from ocean. If there is a strong river, you won't go into it. If there's a gentle lake, you will, you don't mind swimming. You treat them differently, but you know that this source is all water. So similarly, all of us have emerged from that one Brahman, the one consciousness. So all of us are nothing but that one Brahman. And once I understand that, that they are, then they are, what he says, I am Brahman, everybody is Brahman. So they are all me. That understanding is very, very important. And that has to be a constant understanding. And I will talk about some exercises in the second class. I mean, the second verse, I've talked about some exercises. So it has to be a constant understanding. And then I love everybody as myself, right? If they are all me, then there is nobody. It's like in my body there are different parts. Now my hand and my feet and my eyes and my nose. But is it that I love my eyes more than my feet? Eyes are more important than feet, no? Feet, who cares? No, a foot is as important as the eyes. You know, if the feet are not there, how are you going to get around? Hands, legs, nose, every part of the body I love equally because they are all me. And even if the foot is giving me problem, I have a bad ulcer, it's very painful, there is pus coming out, and, you know, the doctor says, you know, you might have to amputate. No, 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 doctor. You'll do everything, put medicine, go to the doctor, have, you know, incisions done, antibiotics, be admitted in the hospital. Even though the foot is giving me severe pain, I don't want to give it up. Why? Because it is me. And if the doctor says it's gangrene, nothing can be done, then what do I do? Go to Ayurveda. Say, maybe now they might alternate medicine, they may find something, or homeopathy, or I go to the Mayo Clinic, or I go to Cleveland Clinic. So everything I do to protect me, because they are me, even if the foot is causing problem, I don't hate that foot. I massage it, I caress it, I dress it, I put ointments. Why? To save it. So similarly, even though a person may be giving problems in society, but a wise person understands they are still me. And yes, if the final stage comes where the foot cannot be saved, then, you know, you have to cut it off. It's become so gangrenous. We tried everything. So similarly, a person who is that much trouble, society may have to put them away, you know, maybe put them in jail, or somebody is a crook or a criminal who cannot be reformed. But a wise person understands that this person has been put away for a particular reason, but inside he has no hatred. Even if that person has done a lot of harm to me, has hurt me, why? Because they are all me, everybody is me. That's what we learn from all these Mahatmas. You look at Jesus, look at Buddha, evolved saints like Shankaracharya and all. After all that knowledge, what was the result of Buddha's teaching? Compassion. Even though he had nirvana and all this knowledge, what is Christ's message? Love, love that. So all these Mahatmas, all of Advaita talks about that oneness. We are all that one. So there is nobody whom I hate, nobody whom I love, and there is spontaneous compassion and love for all. Love is the universal message of all religions, and compassion. Talking about love is just a little aside, it's kind of humorous. So, you know, like you tell somebody, you tell your husband, I love you, and he says, I love you too. Be very careful. You know why? Because I'll say it in Hindi and then translate. Suppose he says, I love you too. Now, there could be two meanings. Main bhi tumhe pyar karta hoon. या मैं तुम्हें भी प्यार करता हूँ सर मीन्स आई ऑल्सो लव यू और आई लव यू ऑल्सो सो यू हैव टू बी वेरी केयरफुल व्हेन ही सेज आई लव यू टू मेक श्योर व्हाट इज व्हाट ही रियली मीन्स बाय बिकॉज ही माइट बी थिंकिंग आई लव समबडी एल्स एंड आई लव यू टू सो दैट्स व्हाई आई लव इट यू हैव टू बी वेरी क्लियर सो दिस पर्सन दिस वाइज पर्सन हैज टोटल वननेस टोटल लव फॉर ऑल. And how does that come? What brings about this total compassion and love? Because of supreme devotion. Mad bhaktim labhate param. Krishna says he has supreme devotion for me. Now, when Krishna says me, you think, oh, so Krishna says you should only love me. You should not love Shiva or Mother Durga or Ganpati or Jesus or... No, what he means when he says me, he's not talking about the son of Devaki and Vasudev, the flute player, the teacher of the Gita. When he, in the Gita, when he says me and I, he talks about me, that Om, that consciousness. So he identifies with that total Brahman and consciousness because he has understood that I am Brahman. You and I still don't, and that's why we also think of Krishna only as that. But one who sees Krishna only in the form is actually being confused. He actually should see Krishna as the total reality. We'll talk about that also later on. So when Krishna says I am, and another place he says, Brahman no pratishtaham. He says, I am the abode of Brahman. Again, what he means is that I am that Brahman, that consciousness, who at this moment has appeared on this earth, Arjuna, and is your friend and your charioteer and your guide. But I am that supreme reality. See that in me. And that's why in the 11th chapter, which we have done a few months, few years back, he shows the supreme form, the entire universe in him. He shows Arjuna. Arjuna says, I want to see that supreme form of yours, Virat Roop, the cosmic form. And Krishna shows him in that small body of 6 feet or whatever, the entire universe Arjuna sees, the past, present and future. He sees the entire world, including the oceans and the mountains and even the heavens and the hells and the ghosts and the goblins and the gods and the Indras. He sees the past, present and future. He sees what's going to happen in this war. Krishna shows him how these people are going to be dead. Everything he could see in that. So the point is that the supreme reality, the Brahman, the consciousness, had appeared on the earth as Krishna and was playing that part. So when he says Mad Bhaktim, he does not only mean he is devoted to me, but devoted to me as the supreme consciousness. And that's called Param Bhaktim. Now, what do we mean by Param Bhaktim? So, Gurudev in his commentary says, the devotion only means identification. oneness. Devotion can only come from constant identification, constant oneness. Like when a person, say they are a couple, they are first in love, you know, and they are all the time thinking about each other. And even though the boy is somewhere and then he sees a person on the roadside selling, you know, roses for $10, he'll stop, you know, oh, you know, my beloved, she loves roses. So he'll pick it up. Why? Because all the time he's thinking about her. When he's eating something good, he say, "Oh, my! I know she loves this." So he'll pick up like mangoes. You know, on his way home from work, he'll pick up mangoes. Or the wife or the beloved, you know, he loves this particular food. So when she's cooking, she's thinking about him. So why? Because there is no sense of separation. To the extent you are identified, to that extent you love. If you are once in a while thinking about this person or thinking, you know, then that's not love. Love is constant identification with the beloved. Beloved means the one who I love the most. So when I say I am a bhakta, I am a devotee of Krishna or Ram or Jesus, or it's not as a power somewhere sitting up there in the temple or up in the Vaikuntha or somewhere. But my beloved, my Lord, my beloved Lord, that identification one has to have. And that's the one I love the most. So develop a relationship of love with God. My beloved Lord. You know, that's why even there is a song in our Bal Vihar. We don't sing it nowadays, but it's in English. And there he talks about this George Harrison. That's composed by him. And he says, my beloved Lord. And the rest, of course, talks about how I, you know, love you and how. So that, to the extent you develop the oneness, that God is not separate from me. That's why Mirabai said, you know, Mere to Giridhar Gopal, Dusra na koi, Tukaram, and all of these great saints, and the total oneness with God, total identification, total love, that is very necessary. And that's why they say bhakti is necessary. Bhakti ke bina mukti nahi milegi. Without love, you cannot get liberation. Knowledge is good. I am that. But then that has to be accompanied by the love. And when two are together, love and knowledge, then no, nothing can stop you. So get the right knowledge from the teacher. Read the scriptures, read the books. And then develop love for God and love for this knowledge. That's very important. And daily swadhyay, daily listening, you know, to this. And then, of course, all the Swamiji's come. We have CDs that, you know, so that you have heard them. So go home and listen to them again. And then weekly listening also, what we discuss here, what it does is at least for me, it reinforces me a lot when I'm sitting and preparing. So constant listening, because of course Swamiji's come once a month or maybe in 2 months, but at least we try to every week cover the same knowledge. And what I am talking is basically what I have read from the book and then from Swamiji's talks, Gurudev's and Swamiji's talks. So I try to compile. So it is not something that I think about. It is totally, I'm just repeating what I have heard from them. So constant listening is very important. Listening, reading, and think about it. Why? What have I heard? What did I discuss? What did I read? So think about it and see if it is applicable. See if it is beneficial. See if it applies to me. And then bring it into your daily life. Don't only just leave it as, okay, pad liya, you know, 18th chapter is over. No, 18th chapter is not over. 18th chapter has to become my life for my next 18 years. Then only it is beneficial. So this beautiful verse will continue in the verse number 55 and then next week in 56. So any comments, any questions? Yes.
You said love is needed for oneness. But isn't that love bring the bonding to, then you get possessive about that and you can get hurt?
Yes.
And all the circle starts again.
Now that's a very good question. So in the Amrita Bindu Upanishad, Rishi starts with that. Mana e manushya nam karnam bandha moksha yoho. So the mind is the cause of your bondage and the mind will be the cause of liberation. So a mind that is attached to objects, the next verse he says, is bondage, attached to objects, and that can get hurt, objects, people, things. But a mind that is attached to the Lord is ever free. That takes you to freedom, because you don't get bound. You don't say it is only my Krishna. Everybody, you know what I'm saying? And then holding on to that is actually will free you from the worldly bondages. All these great saints, they had so many problems, so many, even their own family members, Mirabai, they all left her. But she nothing affected her. Why? Because she had held on to Krishna. So holding on to the world will create all this same thing, bondage, sorrow, disappointments, all that. But God will never leave you. See, a person may leave you, husband or wife may leave you, money may leave you, children will leave you. But God will never. We leave him. He never leaves us. So once you hold on to that, that is not bondage. That actually is liberation. That will take you towards the highest. Because then also you see God in all. So it makes you more evolved. So mind attached to the world is bound. Mind attached to him is free. Him or her. You know, it can be mother goddess or whoever. Or the formless. You know, it can be. Else?
So then the question comes up that if you are very sick, like you have cancer or something, and you are hurting very, very bad, that time how would you feel like God is with me? It's hard
yes.
to think.
Yeah. No, that's very true. When you are in pain or when you have cancer and all, yeah, it's very difficult. I agree with you, it's very hard. But once you have this knowledge, then you can even watch the pain as a witness, as a sakshi. Without this knowledge, yes, you will be crying, you will be cursing God, you will be cursing, you know, the circumstances or my karmas or why am I suffering and all. But once you have this knowledge, then you can go through life's joys and sorrows with the same equanimity. Because he will say, first of all, if I have cancer or pain, it is my own karmas that have done it. Maybe I smoked. Or maybe I, you know, had some wrong, you know, habits or whatever, because of which I got this suffering, this number one. Number two, if I am experiencing pain or suffering, I must have done something bad to somebody, either in this life or a previous life, because of which I am suffering. This law of karma is 100% correct. It's nobody suffers due to somebody else. If you have suffering, it is your own actions. And that person knows. If I'm having pain, I must have hurt somebody and done something bad to somebody because of which I'm going through this. Recently, I went through a very, very painful surgery. I was in a lot of pain and I still, you know, came and taught the classes and all. I tried to not cancel any class, not let people know. Because you understand, pain will come. You know, situations will come and go in your life where there will be pain, there will be suffering, but it's my own karmas that have done it. And if things are going well, it's my own good karmas. So then his person, A, doesn't blame anybody. Secondly, he knows that it is happening as a result of my karmas. The third thing is, I am this Brahman, this consciousness. This body, mind and intellect are my equipment. And they are for me to use. So just as a car is my equipment to drive from here to home to the office, if tomorrow the car breaks down, I just pick up, go get another car. Either get it repaired or buy another car if it cannot be repaired. So similarly, this body is my equipment. If I can fix it, I'll repair it. If not, if I have to give up this body, I'll go get another body. So what? Then the person becomes. So with this knowledge, you slowly become that. And even death cannot affect you that much. A wise person, if you see, Raman Maharishi, he had to have a big operation. He had to have an abdominal surgery. He said, I do not want anesthesia. He refused to take anesthesia. He just went into Samadhi and he said, you can cut and do whatever you want. And nothing, he didn't even move. So gradually you develop a detachment. See, first of all, you have to develop detachment from things and beings. Ultimately, even detach yourself from your body. I am not this body. I have a body. I am not the body. See, there's a very important difference. When you say, I am the body, then of course, whatever is happening to the body is happening to me. But if you say, I have a body, then yeah, the body is meant to get old, meant to suffer. Who in this world will not get old, tell me? Who in this world is not going to die? Who in this world is not never going to have pain? Who in this world is never going to have sorrow? Is there anybody? Anybody you know? No. Even Mahatma Gandhi, even Jesus, even Buddha, they all had these same problems. Raman Maharishi, Ramakrishna Paramahansa had a very painful cancer. He was in severe pain and he couldn't even swallow. He couldn't even eat in his last days. He was very happy. He was very peaceful. He said, Mother Goddess is with me. Why, how so what if there is cancer? So the knowledge will only teach you that. Without knowledge, yes. But and applying this knowledge, not only leaving it in the book, but bringing it into the life. And it doesn't mean you don't take pain medicine. If you have pain, of course, take Tylenol or take some codeine or something. But it's not me. It's happening to the body. And then also continuing to do your activities despite the pain. And that's very important. You know, if you let the pain get you down, oh, I am sick. Oh, I am miserable. Then you will be sick and miserable. You say, yes, I have this illness. I have a cold, cough, pain, yes, fever. Okay, I'll take the medicine and go to work. Do my things. So then it teaches you to go beyond pains, go beyond joys and sorrows. And you have to apply that. You can't just leave it in the book. Otherwise, there's no use. Yes. Yes.
And I've been sitting here thinking about you know, you love your children, and that's what does cause grief if something happens to them. And you feel their pain. And, you know, and I look at Swami Chinmayananda, and he doesn't have those kind of attachment or those kind
yes.
of identifications. So most of the Swamis do not. Because of that, they don't identify with anybody. So they don't. So this thing called that we call love. It when you talk about love of God, it's got to be a different kind of love.
Yes.
It's not the same. It's not what we believe is love from our experience. If our experience is
right.
The love that comes from identification.
Right. So I think what you're saying is it's easy to be a Swami, right? Is it easy to give up your husband, your children, your home, your car, your TV, your cell phone, your iPad, give up everything and go and just live in a monastery? It's not easy.
No, it's got to be almost impossible.
It's impossible, number one. Number two, they have other attachments. See, once they are working in the world, they have to run a mission, they have to, you know, teach classes, they have to... And they also are human, so they have the same. But what you're talking about is attachment to the child. Again, comes when you think it is my child. If you think that this child has been given to me by God to take care of, and I take care of the child for 18 years, and then when she has to go to college, I send her and I don't chase after her and let her live her life. If she needs me, I am available. Then you are not identifying with the child. You are taking care of the child as a caretaker. Like you have a rental house. You know, you stay in that rental. You don't say it is my house. You say it is a rented house, belongs to the landlord. And when it's time to leave, you leave the house and go to another house. So the child is a rented child. It doesn't belong to me. You have to have that attitude that God has given me this child. It is God's child. She has come into my house and she will be with me for the next 18 years. And I have to love that child, take care of the child. But I don't identify to that extent that if something happens to the child, I become devastated. I try to, see, for a mother, it's very hard. Say a daughter is going through a problem. Say her boyfriend, you know, she's having problems. Boyfriend left her. So she's crying and she's miserable. And, you know, mothers always go through that. And they feel so bad and they so feel so hurt. I mean, it is natural. But if you are also going to start crying with her, then you have not helped the problem. You have to be brave. You have to be loving. You have to be understanding. And with that love, you can carry the child through all her problems. But if you start also falling apart and all the time you're thinking of the child, and then I know of one mother who actually left her husband and took an apartment where the daughter was in the college. Can you imagine the more foolish thing than that? People do that. And the husband is working here and she's living with the in the apartment next to the university. Why? Because I can't leave my daughter. So that is called attachment. That is called. But what we mean by identification is that the total oneness. So with the child also, you love them as God, that God has come in my house for 18 years, she's here, and then I let them go. And you still love them. And say, and but not only that, but also that same love should be for everybody's children. You know, so that is what. So it's very hard being a Swami. We keep saying, oh, they don't have any husband, they don't have any children, life is easy. Life is very tough. It's hard for them. You know, they have gone through so much to give up everything. And to be, and they again don't know when the next meal is coming from. Sometimes somebody says, I'm going to bring food for you, lunch for you, Swamiji, and they don't show up. And it has happened to them. They say, so what do we do then? You know, because they don't have a kitchen or anything, and somebody, either the car broke down or they forgot. People even forget.
Pizza.
Oh, I was supposed, yeah, they have to order pizza or go. Or, you know, or scrounge around in the kitchen and see what they... So the point is that, I mean, that plus this, they have a lot more responsibilities. They have to teach. They have to make sure the mission is doing well. They have to, you know, and their life is a life of service.
My intent was not to...
No.
I did not think that a Swami's life is... What I was trying to do is to get into the head of a Swami.
Right. Yeah, actually, there is a book called Drig Drishya Vivek. It's a beautiful book. If I think they have copies, you must take it. If you have understood Drig Drishya Vivek, there is nothing more to understand. And actually, there are also commentaries by Swami Bodhatmanandaji. They may have it in the office. But there he talks about the silent witness. And since we don't have time to do the next verse, I'll spend a little bit time about this Drig Drishya Vivek. It's a very beautiful topic. And the book starts with this. Some people say it was written by Shankaracharya ji. Some people say it was written by Vidyaranya Swami, who was a Shankara of Sringeri, who was a follower of Shankaracharya ji. So it's a very beautiful book. So Drig Drishya Vivek is the difference between the seer and the seen. Drig is the seer and Drishya is the seen. So Drig Drishya Vivek means the discrimination or the difference between the seer and the seen. So we are coming to the silent witness. So the book starts with, objects are the seen, the eye is the seer. The eye is the seer, right? The eye is seeing, I'm seeing him, I'm seeing the fan, light. Objects are seen and the eye is the seer. Now can the objects know the eye? No. The objects cannot see the eye. The eye can see the objects. And the eye is not affected by what is happening to the objects. Right? So my eye, if I see something blue, doesn't become blue. When I see something red, it doesn't become red. The eye is the seen. The seer, the objects are the seen. And the object is known to the eye. Now the condition of the eye. When we talk about eye, it's not the physical eye. But the ability to see. See, that means my sense of seeing, what we call as the sense. It means it is the ability. That means the what you can call it as the nervous, the optical nerve and the nervous system, the optical, for you know, doctors, the optical sense in the, what optical, what is that? Lobe or optical lobe in the posterior, that and the senses and the nerves and all. And the ability to see, that is seeing, that is the eye. The ability to hear, the ability to smell, and the olfactory nerves, the ability to hear auditory nerves, the ability to taste, the ability to touch the skin. So with the skin, I feel all the objects. With the nose, I smell all of them. With the ears, I hear all the sounds, you know, the happy sounds, the sad sounds, the crying, the laughing, the music. But the ear is can hear the sounds. The sounds cannot know the ear, right? That is clear. So the ear is the knower, and the sounds are the known. So the eyes are the seer, and the things are the seen. Also, the seer cannot be the seer and the seen at the same time. So the eyes cannot say, I'm seeing the objects and the objects are seeing me. No, the eye can only be a seer of the objects. So that's number one. Now the eye, the condition of the eye is known to the mind. Right? The mind knows that my eyes are now blurry, I'm getting a cataract, so I need to get surgery or I need to get glasses. Or my eyes are red, my eyes are hurting. So the condition of the eyes is known to the mind. So the mind knows the eyes. The eyes cannot know the mind. The eyes cannot tell what is happening in my mind. But the mind knows what is happening to the eyes. Right? So, and also, the eyes cannot, can be the seer of the objects, but cannot be seen by the objects. So the mind is the seer of the eyes. But the mind cannot be seen by the eyes. The eyes can see everything else, but it cannot see what is happening to the mind. So the condition of the eyes is known to the mind. So the eyes are the seen and the mind is the seer. Right? Eyes are the seen, mind is the seer. Now the condition of the mind is known to the intellect, the wisdom. So the intellect, or you can say the mind and intellect, you can, in that book, he counts them as together. So the mind and intellect together know what is happening to the eyes. And the condition of the mind and intellect is known to who? To me. Now when I say me, you might say, well, I am the intellect, I am the knower, I am the smart guy, I know everything. No, but even the condition of the intellect is known to somebody else. Like I am smart. Or I am not so smart. Or I understand. I don't understand. I know English. I don't know Russian. So who is that that knows what I know and what I do not know? There has to be something else, right? The intellect cannot know itself. The intellect is the condition of my intellect. Like I'm getting old now. My memory is going down. Who is saying that my memory, when he says my memory is going down, means my intellect used to be sharp, but it's not as sharp anymore. I used to be, you know, I could memorize so many numbers. Now with cell phone, I can't even memorize my own home number. My own cell number I have to look up. So the condition of the intellect is known to that consciousness. So that consciousness is the silent witness. Who is the knower of the intellect? Confusion of the intellect, the joys and sorrows of the mind, the fluctuations of the body, and knows all the objects. So that is the ultimate seer. And nothing can know that. Now that consciousness, that Brahman, that God, who is in the knower in every one of us. That's why Sri Krishna in the 13th chapter, he says, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. He says, O Arjuna, I am the knower in all the fields. The fields means all these worlds. When he talks about the field, he says the objects, you know, the ego, the mind, the intellect, everything is known to me, Krishna says. When he talks about me, he's talking about Om, the total knower. And that silent witness, nothing else can know that, knows everything else and is unaffected. So witness is one who is unaffected in all kshetreshu, in all fields. I may get happy or unhappy, but the Lord is ever happy, ever, because he is not affected. He is not changed. He doesn't change. He doesn't fluctuate. He doesn't, not that one day he is happy. You say, well, you know, the God, you mean he doesn't get sad when so many people are suffering? What kind of God is that? He'll say, well, okay. Should I be sad for the people who are suffering, or should I be happy for the people who are happy? On the one side, you know, people are dying, but on the other side, kids are being born. There are more born. So should I be happy for the people who are born, or should I be sad for the people who are Should I be happy for the person who is celebrating his birthday, or should I be unhappy for the person who is going through a divorce? Either these things are going to happen in the world. God cannot be happy, unhappy. Then he's like one of us. Then he becomes human. You know, that's why the silent witness knows everything, but itself is not involved. I've given this example of the Macy's parade, but I think it's worth knowing if you're talking about the silent witness. It's a very nice example I'd heard from one of the Swamijis. I think Swami Chinmayananda, in his commentary, he talks about the parade. It's like you're sitting on Park Avenue, you have an apartment on the fifth floor, and from the balcony you are watching the Macy's parade. I don't know, Park Avenue or Broadway, wherever it goes. So you are watching the Macy's parade. So you're watching first, there is nothing, you know, the street is empty. And then slowly in the distance, you see the parade coming and you see all the floats and all the beautiful, you know, things. Now, there could be two situations. One is you have a child in the parade. Say you have your son is in the one of the floats. Then you are watching, waiting to see when is my son coming. But you don't have a child. You have nobody in that parade. You are just watching out of joy. Because your balcony is there, you can watch. So every year you watch the parade. So the parade comes and you're watching the parade and you're enjoying. You know, it's beautiful, the new floats and all. And then slowly, slowly, slowly the parade goes away, ends. Then what is left? Just you, the watcher, right? You, the watcher. Before the parade started, you were there alone. There was nothing. The street was empty early in the morning, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. The street was empty. Then the whole activity of the parade came. And then when the parade disappears, then you alone are there. So that is the silent witness who observes everything, witnesses everything, but is not involved. Knows what is going on, but does not participate in. God does not participate in our joys and sorrows. He's there to support us if we need help, if we ask for help. And you know, that we will talk about his grace. That's actually in the next week. We'll talk about God's grace, you know, mat prasadat. So the grace of the God is always available to us, but he is not involved. So that is the silent witness who watches the parade, but itself is not affected. So I hope that answers your. Yes.
So will the knower of the field and the silent witness are the same?
Yes. The knower of the field, the silent, the ultimate knower, the Om, the Brahman, the consciousness. And they're just silent witness. There are different words that express. Because the Brahman cannot be described. So they use different indicators to point out. So one of them is silent witness. It's also unaffected, avyaya, unaffected, never born, never dies, you know, constant, all those things, all pervading. And that I am. See, that you never have to forget, and we'll talk more about that next week. That I am. Brahman is not somebody sitting up there, all pervading. That I am. Because what else can I be? Every cell of my body is made of that. Where did I come from? I came from Brahman. Every cell of my body, there are 7 billion or 4 billion cells. They're multiplying because of Brahman, right? 4 billion cells are constantly multiplying, creating, and then they are functioning. The digestive system works with the circulatory system. The right time, the blood goes there, and then the oxygen goes there, and you know, new creation is that. Every cell of my body is that. So how can I be separate from Brahman? So when I say I am Brahman, does not mean I am God. But God is everything. Brahman is everything, including me. So when you say the silent witness, that is me. When you say unchanging, that is me. When you say unaffected, that is me. When you say all pervading, that is also me. Me, not me as Tony, but me as the consciousness.
Or the Atman.
As Atman, as Brahman. But that is me. It's not separate from me. That you have to understand that. And next week I'll do some exercises how to practice this in our day-to-day life. We do have some exercises that I heard from Swami Bodhatmanandaji. But that you have to, that I am not separate from God. God is not separate from me. God is functioning through me. He's the silent witness. And I am not separate. Of course, it does not mean it's not arrogance. It is the humility that God alone is everything. I am nothing. This ego then disappears. When you say, I am that, then there is no perceiver, feeler, and thinker. Then God alone is. But some people misunderstand as thinking, I am God. You know, Vedantin said they are God. No, we don't say we are God. We say God is everybody, including me. See, there's a very important difference between saying I am God or saying God is everybody, including me. If God is in everyone, why is he not in me? This will go into more detail, but anything? Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah, so the next two verses, 55 and 56, as I told you, will make this even more clear. What is this Brahman and how can we get closer? Already we have talked about a lot of things today. You know, you intellectually understand, then you apply that, you develop peace, you see no differences, you then don't have any incompleteness, you are complete, you develop love and compassion, and you become identified with that Lord, oneness, and that bhakti, that total love, total identification is very necessary. So that's what already we have hopefully progressed. This at least will make it little clear. Next week we'll talk more about Krishna says what and who I am. That who am I and how such a person understands who I am, and then what does he do and how does he enter me? How does he become me? There are some beautiful exercises. We'll practice that next week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Shanti, 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 Harihi Om, Shri Gurubhyo Namah, Harihi Om.